This is Halftime with the Playmakers, your midweek partner with the live show, The Playmakers, aired on WNM 90.5 on Saturdays from 12:30 to 2 p.m. I'm your host, Michael Trum Jr., and in today's show, we got some great topics. We'll be discussing our expectations for FAMU, men's baseball and women's softball. What would a home court mean in the SWAC tournament for the Rattler fan base? Is Florida the best team in men's college basketball? And was this the most impressive Super Bowl win ever? But to help me with these topics, I got some great guys in the studio.
Yo, it's your boy EJ, aka EJR3. Every journey remembered. Let's make some more.
Yo, it's your boy Chilly Willie, tuning back in with y'all from the 312 Chicago.
Jay Lloyd back in the building, man. Excited. Bringing that sauce all the way from Stone Mountain, Georgia, man. Let's go.
All right, how y'all feeling today?
Hey, man, I feel good. Great.
Feel good, man. Straight. I feel good, you know. I know EJ.
Oh, yeah, I'm over here saying straight. I forgot
amazing.
Already, man.
Like EJ
the time just
amazing.
Flew by amazingly.
That just means nobody cares about Super Bowl.
No, I do. I've just partied out, man. Like, it's just amazing. You know, like, when Jim said they were the 96 Bulls and, you know, kind of defeated them, what does that make us?
I don't know. That really doesn't matter.
He talking about he partied out like he was at the parade float or
That's
something.
That's what I'm saying.
He was drinking champagne with them, boy.
I felt like it.
But let's hop right into the show. FAMU Men's Baseball is set to kick off their season this Saturday against UT Martin in a 4-game series. Last year, they went 29-27. They also, in the preseason, they have a preseason, the preseason pick for Pitcher of the Year, Caleb Granger. So what are your thoughts and expectations heading into the baseball season?
I would say my thoughts right now is I'm looking for them to be a little further away from that 500 team or close to 500 team that they were last year. Now, I know it's difficult to win championships. I know it's difficult to win SWAC championships and repeat and do that, especially when players are interchanging. But just got to see a little bit more consistency than they had last year. So it's good that we have one of the top pitchers in HBCUs right now, hopefully one of the top pitchers in the nation. And that's a good sign for what the team could be moving forward. So if we on the right page there already, sky's the future for the team. So I'm looking forward to them just making marginal improvements off of what they did last year.
Yeah, going off that, I completely agree. I see that we went 22-8 in the conference, so it seems like most of the losses obviously weren't from conference teams. So I feel like now we just polish up and be able to win more of those games. So we could be like maybe 27-3, something like that. It'll make the record look even better going on to next season.
Yeah, last season they finished first in the SWAC. There's no reason to not expect that to be the same going into it. I expect them to, you know, go through, win the SWAC, get into the tournament, and, you know, be a little bit better than 29-27 as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the roster that we have, I think we have the ability to not sneak into the tournament, but get to the tournament and actually, like, you know, play upset and play spoiler a little bit to some of these Power 5 teams. Now, moving on to the women's softball team, what are your expectations for them?
When it comes to the women's softball team here at FAMU, if time has told me anything, in 2023, when they went 20-22, and 2023 finishing fifth in the SWAC East, and then 2024, they ended up doing much better, finishing first in the SWAC East and going 26-20. Time has kind of just told me that they've gotten better as time has gone along. And I kind of expect the same thing heading into 2025. I think the team should finish first in the SWAC all around. And same thing as the baseball team heading into the tournament.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I feel like this team is obviously very settled and know what they need to do to win. I just feel like some games they have slumps. Looking at some of their losses last season, like every loss that they've had, no loss has been less than 3. So it seems like just some games they just, you know, don't have everything going, which is understandable. But if you're able to fix that, it'll change a great season into a phenomenal season.
Yeah, I think they're a competitive team, and that shows just by the strength of their conference record from last year. 19-5 in conference play, not easy to do. Also, they played well at home last year too, which is a good sign. They had 6 losses at home, 12 wins. If they can clean up some of the losses that they had at home and also on the road too, I think they were 9-6 on the road, if I'm looking at it now. So if they can clean up some of those home losses and get a few more wins on the road too, they're already looking at a better record. So just like I said, marginal improvement will get them where they need to go.
Yeah, I agree with you, Justin. I think if they just do the little things right, and I know Willie pointed it out that a majority of the losses were within 3 points. So if they can just close out, do the little things, I think they can get their first SWAC championship appearance and victory. All right, now moving on to the court, the men's Rattlers basketball team is currently 7-4 in the SWAC and are riding a 2-game win streak following their 5-game win streak that they had earlier on in the season. Now, my question to you guys is, what would a home court SWAC tournament game mean for the Rattler fan base?
A lot. Like I said, I mean, in my time here, I ain't never seen it. I didn't even know there was a SWAC tournament. I didn't know the basketball had a SWAC tournament because I never knew that we could go to it. So I think it would do a lot. It would change the basketball program. Assuming Shakir stays another year as well, there's that added on bonus of just fans in general coming to see him play because the name holds weight. So I think, you know, getting to a tournament and just participating, especially having home court advantage, fam, you going, you know, that basketball program going to start to look a little better with that.
No, yeah, I definitely agree. I feel like the fans is definitely going to come out, especially like you said, ever since I've been here, I've never seen them make it past to the SWAC tournament or like do it, be competitive. So it's like seeing this, it'll be something new for their fans. And I feel like everybody's going to show up. It's going to be real live. It's going to be real turn. It'll be real like difficult for anybody that has to come into this arena because there will be a lot of liveliness and a lot of energy coming from the fan base.
Yeah, it would be huge for this fan base. It officially shows that FAMU basketball is here. It's no longer just, oh, it's basketball season. Let's not pay attention.
Exactly.
No. Let's come out to the games. Let's come out and support because not only are the results showing, but if you just see them play, it's an exciting team to watch. The last game I was at, it was a game they actually lost against Alabama State. And even though it was some sloppy play from them, excuse me, I was really impressed with the way that they fought back in that game.
Yeah.
I think that team showed incredible resolve as well. So I think that that's a great sign for them moving forward for the next few years. Just the culture that Crary is setting, and they're talking about him getting not only an extension, but possibly SWAC Coach of the Year, which is huge.
Definitely.
So it's looking like this is the first step of turning this program around and making it a powerhouse in the SWAC basketball realm. So,
and Justin, that 1 point loss to Alabama State, I mean, the fact that they only lost by 1 point, like, that really showed me a lot. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I remember texting the group chat, like, yo, we're getting beat, like, we stole something right now. Like, it was bad. I was like, Alabama State just better than this. And next thing I know, it's like, we have an opportunity to win. Shakir hitting 3 point and ones. I'm like, oh man, like, this team's actually kind of nice. And we had a chance to win, we fell short, but it was good to see like a team that could actually fight back. And before I just be like, oh, we just suck and we're getting blown out. So that difference in the FAMU team that can fight back even being behind, it's good to have.
I believe I mentioned this on the last episode, but I really like how they're starting to find who their guys are. Who can we turn to in pivotal moments of the game when we need to go get a bucket? Who can we turn to when we need them to guard the best player? These are things that if you're calling yourself a great team, you have to know these things going into games, especially as the play gets to be more competitive. So
exactly.
The fact that they're found that now and it's starting to show and translate into wins, great sign for the future.
Yeah, I'm glad they put the ball in Milton Matthews' hands and that game winner he had it against Texas Southern, I believe.
Right.
Yeah, that's what you were saying, kind of, or get to that point exactly about knowing who the guys you want to go to. Like, they put the ball in his hands and they knew they could trust him and he delivered. So you start to develop around those guys and know who your guys are. It helps you when it comes to that tournament play a lot.
100%. I agree with what y'all are saying. The way the rest of the season is going, or the way that it's heading, the Rattlers can finish as high as two in the SWAC and hopefully compete with Southern, which they got blown out by earlier on in the season. Southern is actually a really good basketball team. They, I was looking at the stats and net rating. Southern is the only team in the SWAC that has at least a quad two win. You know, in March Madness, once they start seeding the teams, they look at your quad one wins, your quad two wins. Nobody in the SWAC has obviously a quad one win. So when you look at the quad two wins, Southern's the only team that has that. Granted, it came against Louisiana Tech, but if you look at Louisiana Tech and you look at Southern University, that's an impressive win for Southern. So I don't think we'll win it because Southern's such a good basketball team. So
they did just drop one to Alabama State though.
True.
Yesterday by one point as well.
That is true. Have we seen Alabama State yet?
Yeah, that was the team we lost to one by.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit about the Alabama State game. It was looking like it was going to be a blowout. I believe it was an 18-point lead in the first half that we ended up cutting.
Oh yeah, that's the game Shakir missed the game winner.
Yeah, right. And then we
trailed
by 15
but
in the second half. We trailed by 15 in the second half, and then we also came back then too. So the fight was just a little bit different. It looked like they were a bit more motivated, and I think that's just a sign of them being well coached. And that was a game where they honestly came out playing a little lazy. If you listen to how Coach Curry talks about that game, they came out lazy, a little lethargic, feeling themselves over a 5-game win streak. I think that loss is something that they can take and just build on moving forward.
Yeah, definitely.
As far as like how this is how we cannot come to play, especially if we're going to be one of the better teams in the conference, because as you start to rack up more wins, there's going to be that target on your back and teams are going to come in playing with a bit more energy than you.
100%. Now obviously this is the best FAMU basketball season in Lord knows how long, so, and Coach Crary is on a 1-year deal. So do you think, let's speak in hypothetical, Let's just say we get to the SWAC championship game against Southern, which that's my predicted matchup, and we drop it. Do you think Coach Craver would take a bigger job elsewhere or stick it out at FAM and continue to build the program?
I say stick it out. It's hypothetical. It's all opinionated. But I say stick it out simply because you took a program that hadn't even been in the tournament at all, able to compete, and you took them to, in this hypothetical situation, the SWAC championship, and you lost. I think that you obviously have built something in your first year to say, like, hey, we have something that's promisable and we can actually work with that going forward. So I think from Coach Craig's point of view, why not stick it out? Why not work with these guys? Why not, you know, develop this team and build this basketball culture at FAMU that can be?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But, you know, at the end of the day, though, you don't know what type of opportunities he may get. And so you can't just, I mean, as much as he did do so much for FAMU, if certain things come up where you get to a big, like, you know, D1 program or something like that, that's a little bit, you know, higher scale than FAMU, then if he takes it, you obviously can't be that upset with it. But to be ideal, it would be great for him to stay with us. He's definitely done a lot for the program already. Just with, I mean, he can honestly lose out and he's still done a lot for the program. Like, it's just, it's been way different than what we've been used to seeing with FAMU. And so I just really hope that he does stay with us just so we can keep improving in the future and that things will keep going better for FAMU basketball.
It's a tough question because I don't know if he is going to be the type of coach who is going to jump to another program after 1 year of success, especially if, I mean, we're winning right now. We don't know how the season is going to end. So if we're winning right now and then things start to tail off towards the end of the season, then I could definitely see him coming back. If we just happen, throwing this out there, to win the SWAC championship, I think that then that opens the door for him to maybe leave and take a job elsewhere, especially, like you said, Willie, if it's a D1 program. But I think for this year, it's just about ending the season strong and him assessing where his program is at and if he thinks he can take this any further based on who comes back for the team.
Okay. All great answers. Now, let's switch to the larger scheme of things, or the grand scheme of things, as people say. College basketball this weekend, man. A lot of upsets. Not a lot of upsets, but quite a few upsets.
Florida
dethroned the number one team again. They beat Tennessee earlier on in the season. Florida beat Auburn 90-81. Duke lost to Clemson 71-77 in an ACC matchup game. Alabama was in a dogfight with Arkansas, won 85-81. Just to name a couple of the matchups. Now, following Florida's big win against Auburn, are they the best team in the nation, Justin?
I think we're going to find out this weekend.
Okay.
I believe that Florida's resume, and if I'm being honest, Auburn's resume too, I can say that those are two of the top five teams in the nation for sure. I think Alabama has a resume that I look at it, I'm like, okay, I see what y'all are doing, but this is the weekend where I think Alabama can really make that stamp to say, no, we're the best team in the nation. Now, I respect Florida's number one wins against Tennessee and Auburn. I just think I look at Alabama's roster, like from top to bottom, where they're at now and the potential for it at the end of the season, especially when you look at the tournament. I still believe that that is probably the best team in the nation.
Alabama?
Yes.
Mind you, Florida did this without their second best player, Elijah Martin.
Okay.
Forgot to note that.
I respect that. I just think the potential of Alabama, you talk about the depth, the guard lineup, what that turns into at the end of the season, because I think Alabama still has a good amount of freshmen on the roster too, who are still getting their reps in. And it's a combination of, you know, freshmen, seniors playing. So I think at the end of the season, I could look at this Alabama team completely different, especially depending on how they look in their two games against Auburn.
Okay, Willie?
Yeah, I don't know if I would be able to jump the gun that much just yet for Florida, because like you said, I mean, just like, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, they lost by 20 to Tennessee without Zakai Ziegler, one of their main players. So it's like, obviously, everybody has like their good days and bad days, so I won't just like jump the gun that much. But I do think that Florida is a very elite program, and this was a great win against a team that obviously was rolling and just was winning a lot of very good competitive games. So going off that, I do agree with Alabama. I feel like Alabama does have a lot of they have a lot of talent along with experience, and I feel like that'll obviously help you when you come to certain things like that. So I definitely agree with him on that.
EJ?
Yeah, Willie kind of said everything I was going to say, not going to lie. The whole, like, the 20-point loss they had to Tennessee,
yeah.
I think that stuff still sticks with you. I think it lets you know that, like, good teams can have their bad times, their bad moments. So I wouldn't, as Willie was saying, jump the gun. I just can't put them at number one yet. But I'll be honest and put them at top five for sure in the nation currently. But in terms of number one, I have to agree. Right now, just looking at roster, you have to go Alabama.
Okay. Cool. This weekend we have Alabama versus Auburn. Who needs this win more?
Alabama.
Really?
I believe Alabama needs this win more than Auburn needs this win. When I look at the teams that Alabama has played this year, and you can give me 1 second because I'm trying to pull it up specifically, but they don't have a win as good as Auburn's best win, in my opinion. So for Alabama to come in and beat the number one team in the nation, make their stamp over what's looked at to be the odds on favorite to win the SEC, even though they just lost to Florida, I think that is a win that's really going to stand out for them.
That's actually valid. That's actually pretty valid. At first you said that, I was kind of like, I don't know about that. That seems kind of crazy. But Alabama does kind of is looking for that solidified win to kind of say like, hey, we beat, you know, the number one team right now. So I think Alabama has that. They have the ability to do that. So that win, I think, would be more impactful for them than it would be for Auburn, thinking about it from that way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one. I kind of was on the same boat too about I thought that would be more impactful for Auburn just because they're coming off of a loss. But again, though, with a win for Alabama, it'll like obviously establish their dominance and how that they are up there with one of the top three teams in the college basketball scene right now. And so I just think that with Alabama, they just need to like put out a statement to let people know that they're a very serious team and that they could win just as much as Auburn can.
Yeah, the only reason I say Auburn is because as a top team, you don't want to drop two straight, especially this late into the season. But also, especially the two conference opponents. But also for me, Alabama has one loss, and their one loss in Alabama has three losses. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm tripping. They have one loss in SEC play. Yeah. But Alabama's
and Auburn sees Vandy too tonight.
Alabama's three losses in total were against Purdue, Oregon, and Ole Miss.
Yeah.
I think those losses are worse than the Duke loss early on in the season and this past weekend, the Florida loss. So I could see why y'all say Alabama in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn, when I look at the teams who they've played, obviously the Duke game was one that we were looking for them to win. And honestly, I think that score in the Duke game was a little bit closer than what people might think it was. But either way, though, they have great wins against Tennessee. They have a solid win against Georgia. A great win against Iowa State. I just look at Alabama's schedule right now, and they've beaten good teams, too. But this is a chance for them to get their win this season. Like, a win that nobody can really take away from them when we consider how we have viewed this Auburn team for the majority of the season. So,
alrighty. Let's talk about one of the greatest coaches in college basketball history, Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino has the opportunity to do something that has never been done before. Win three national championships with three different teams. Right now, St. John's is ranked number 9 in the nation, and they sit at 20-3. Now, where would you rank Rick Pitino as a head coach if he were to win this third national championship with St. John's? Or third national championship in his career with St. John's? Because you have names like Coach K, Bill Self in there, John Wooden.
But also three with three different teams. That's tough. I'm not going to put him above Coach K. I'm not doing that. That's where you put him at.
I don't know where I can put him at, but I can say that three championships with three different teams is an insane feat, especially in the realm of college basketball, where I think that it's one of the most difficult sports to win a championship in, just based off the way that the tournament usually is. So can I say he's top five? I think you can say he's top five. I think there's an argument that you can say that he's top five. I don't think I can put him over the likes of guys like Coach K, though.
I think it makes him top five for sure.
I agree with top five. Top five is a valid.
Because I believe you have Coach K in there. This is off the top. Coach K, you got to throw Roy Williams in there.
Yeah.
Dean Smith. I would throw John Calipari in there.
Really?
If you look at the recruiting aspect, Coach Cal is one of the best recruiters, obviously, that I've ever seen. Probably the best that I've seen. Him and Coach K. And then Boeheim, maybe?
Yeah.
Here's my thing about the Coach K thing, though. We can talk about him as a recruiter. But
Cal?
Yeah, Coach Cal. Like, we can talk about him as a recruiter, but right. Is it not concerning that the results haven't necessarily been there, especially in the last two decades?
I agree.
Yeah, that is true. It is kind of concerning, but I still think, I don't know if you're saying that to say that maybe we're rating them too high, putting them like at the top, but I feel like still Coach K, I'm still putting them number one. I don't think that changes anything for me personally of where I put Coach K. And I still think, like, to the Pitino point, I think he's top five. And the guys that you were listening, they're all off the head, so it's tough.
It's
but
all interchangeable, though.
That's the tough part. It's like you can really change all of it. That's why I'll just have to say top five, dancing around that 4 or 5 spot for Pitino.
Okay, what about you, Willie?
Yeah, I definitely agree. But I just feel like I would put them at like 3 just because I feel like you got to add like the difficulty on some of these. Like obviously going to 3 different teams, again, like you said, 3 different programs, 3 completely different ways you got to win of things with certain players. So I would just think that if he does accomplish this, it would definitely rank him high where I would put him at 3 because I feel like he just has done things that I don't think no one else would be able to do.
Yeah, and also the space between which he won the championships. His first championship came in 1996, and that was with Kentucky. His second one didn't come until 2013 with Louisville. Now it's 2025. That's 40 years?
There's definitely big gaps in between there.
There's like 30 years in between. So if he were to complete that, I think that would be very impressive, and I don't think that's something that no coach has on their resume.
Having to adjust to all those different styles. Like,
I say it's different areas of play.
3 completely different areas of play.
Yeah.
That is tough to do at 3 different programs to win a championship. That is impressive, and he would be amongst the top 5 for sure.
100%, 100%. Now, switching over to the NFL, the big game was this Sunday, Super Bowl 59, as the Eagles defeated the Kansas City Chiefs 40-22. Now, you know, before we get into this segment, you know, I made a take. You know, I'm about to apologize. I made a take earlier
on
this
season.
That's
crazy. I was going to call you out for that.
The Eagles were 2-2, and I'm sitting there like, you know what?
I'm so glad you did it first. The Eagles, I was going to do it.
I said that the Eagles were going to win, what, 2 more games that year?
No, you gave us a little more. You said we were going to finish with like 6 wins.
You're right. Yeah, I said y'all was going to finish with like 6 wins. They won the Super Bowl and beat my favorite quarterback.
Your team. Own it.
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes put together the worst performance of his career. You know, we're not even going to talk about the garbage time, you know, throws and catches that Xavier Worthy, you know, made. The Eagles dominated that entire game from the coin flip. Jalen Hurts won Super Bowl MVP. I said he was a top 5 quarterback.
Yeah.
And everybody looked at me crazy. And he proved me wrong. Y'all also said that if Saquon doesn't go off for 100 plus yards,
I wouldn't believe he doesn't get 50. But I'll give you that. He got 57, and I'll give you that.
And the Eagles dominated.
Yeah, but You acting like Hurts is the only one that dominated.
No, the defense definitely showed up.
Okay.
So that brings me to ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
Was this the most impressive Super Bowl win ever?
Gotcha. It was. It definitely was the most impressive Super Bowl win. Dropping all bias here for a second. You're talking about a team that just won back-to-back Super Bowls. Regardless of people think that because they had their rings beforehand that they weren't going to try as much, or if they didn't care enough or didn't come to win, this is a back-to-back defending champion. You go in there and you absolutely embarrass them. Embarrass them. Like, I'm talking like, we haven't seen this since the Broncos or Seahawks. Bad. And the score, it was 40-22, but we all know that score is 40-6. We all know that was the real score of the game. So it's like, for a back-to-back defending team to get blown out like this, it just shows the complete dominance. I mean, the Chiefs had the same amount of total yards as the Eagles did points at halftime. They had 24 total yards and the Eagles had 24 points. You understand how embarrassing that is?
Man, yes, I understand.
I know this is your team and all, but like, y'all, like, that's crazy. Like, for a Super Bowl, like, this isn't like a regular season game. Not when the Dolphins put up 72 on the Broncos. It wasn't just something to just blow off. Like, no, like, you shut them out.
Yeah, no, this definitely was going down in history, but just like even watching the game, bro, it's like it was kind of unbelievable how like wild it was that like it was like literally nothing was working at all. Like the only thing that was really working was him trying to scramble with 4 of them big 300 pounders right next to you, bro. It just ain't gonna work. So I definitely think that this is one of, well, I say the most. Actually, yeah, I could see that, bro. It was like, this is like you said, bro, this was complete domination the whole game. Like, it was never a point in the game where it was like, man, they might have a chance. Other than maybe, like, the first pick he threw in the first, like, quarter. But other than that, bro, it was literally just complete belt the whole time. So, it's just...
He's not lying, though. Trim, it was bad. Like, I'm talking, like, y'all didn't get past midfield until the second half.
24 yards. That's a Caleb Williams stat line right there.
Nah, I knew the game was over when... Patrick Mahomes, when the defender pushed the offensive lineman into Patrick Mahomes and it caused
Josh Sweat.
Yeah. And I, what was that, Zach Bond who got the pick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, it's over. Because I was thinking, it was 17-0 at the time. I'm thinking the Chiefs drive down the field.
Get ball
at
half, too.
17-3.
Yo.
At least get a field goal. Then you can go down score after you make your halftime adjustments. 17-10, that's a ball game. You know, the Mahomes comeback story happens and he three-peats. That did not happen. They got
That was bad, bro.
Speaking belt,
of y'all kicker,
man.
That was Bucker, right? That was telling you know, a woman to be in the kitchen. He ain't do nothing that Super Bowl.
That's straight belt, man. But Justin,
it's one of the most impressive I've seen for sure. I don't think it's the most impressive I've seen. I would actually say that the Seahawks 2013 victory over the Broncos is a bit more impressive to me, just because of how hot that Broncos team was going into that game. Nobody expected, like, in the same way we talk about the way the Chiefs game went and that how nobody was expecting Mahomes to have that type of performance, I don't really think anybody was expecting Peyton Manning and that Broncos offense to have the type of performance that they did. And the Legion of Boom, they set the tone from the first drive. I believe that game started off with the safety.
Yeah, that was a crazy game. It was like,
yeah.
It was like a long pick six, too. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was dominant. And then I can maybe throw out the 28-3 comeback. That's a tough one to throw out. But the only reason I can't say that I would definitely say that that's more impressive is because there are a lot of things that went right for the Patriots that should not have.
Are you speaking
gone
as a Falcons
way.
Fan or as a football fan?
I think just a football fan. Like, if you watch the game, I don't know if y'all have ever back and watched that game. Ridiculous.
You guys should have won when Julio Jones caught the ball.
Going on in that game, like bizarre events taking place in that game that makes me kind of stop for a second and say, I don't know if that's the most impressive, even though it is dang impressive. But this is a dominant win. The one thing I can say is that I've always felt like, and I'm ashamed that I didn't really factor this in when I was picking the Super Bowl this year. I picked the Chiefs, I believe. But this entire year, I've always felt like the Chiefs were just like 1 week away from having a loss like this. 1 week away where, like, things just all go wrong. It was too many games where they were kind of skating by, winning off of doink kicks and pass interference calls. Too many games like that. So I was like, you know, there's just no way that they can go this entire season without just getting, like, rammed, for real. So for it to happen in this game against a team where we all knew it was a more complete roster, I felt like I should have kind of expected it. So I'm ashamed, bro. I felt like I should have made that pick for the Eagles, but hindsight is what it is.
You know, when I made my pick, I'm sorry, I think I'm still picking the Chiefs for the next 10 years to win a Super Bowl. Obviously, it's not going to happen, but the Eagles defense is, like, legit.
No, all around.
That's, like, one of the best defenses I've seen in my lifetime. But the most impressive Super Bowl, I wouldn't call it the most impressive. It's up there. It's top five for sure because mm-hmm. they did it against arguably the greatest quarterback of all time from a talent perspective and one of the greatest offensive minds. And they shut him out in the first half.
Yeah.
They shut him out for a majority of the game, actually. 34-0 at one point. But I would go with 2015 when the Broncos beat the Carolina Panthers in Super Bowl 50.
I see you coming from with that, actually.
Because first of all, both of the quarterbacks played atrocious. Peyton Manning, man. He's I don't think he's that good. But from a defensive perspective, they had one interception. Von Miller forced two fumbles. And they had like 13 quarterback hits.
Yeah. It was crazy.
If the defense doesn't show up and they play slightly worse, the Broncos don't win that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So I think that would be my pick for the most impressive Super Bowl win.
I see where you and Justin are coming from with y'all picks. I would just say just to remember that your offensive player of the year, as you predicted, didn't do anything and they still showed up. And I think that's why I give it. Because, like, you know, we can see it from a defensive standpoint. And then as you mentioned in New England coming back, but there was a lot of things that happened with that. And then also the way the Seahawks handled the Broncos. I think all those matter. But from the perspective of your offensive player of the year at 25 rushes for 57 yards, if you would have shown me that, I would have been like, dang, the Eagles lost the Super Bowl. It literally would have been like, dang, Saquon only had 57 yards. Like, Trim was right. I don't know what to say. He said he barely get 50. He did.
Yeah.
But this is where I think we underrate Jalen Hurts' ability. Because if we believe he's a top five quarterback, then I don't think that I would look at this game and say, like, okay, just because Saquon didn't rush for 100 yards or 200 yards, whatever ridiculousness he's put on throughout this season, just because he didn't do that, then they would lose his game.
Yeah, we can't change that, though.
He has the abilities to make that happen.
No, I predicted a shootout. I predicted a shootout. I knew that we were going to stop Saquon Barkley, but I didn't think the Eagles were going to stop Patrick Mahomes. Like, I predicted a shootout. I knew Jalen Hurts was going to ball out.
He did it last time.
He's top five.
I know, but, like, from that top five perspective, that's maybe like us, maybe here, but, like, that's not how Hurts is seen. That's not how that offense has ever been seen. That offense, like, that's why I say it's impressive from a narrative standpoint of, like,
100%.
Yeah, from a narrative standpoint, oh, you mean to tell me Hurts went out there and did what?
Well, I don't think he's top five.
Still, yeah, I keep hearing his top five.
I mean, that's
I don't think he's top five, but I'm saying, like,
okay,
if we're viewing him that way, then it shouldn't be that crazy that they were still able to do what they did in this game, especially when you can consider that, you know, they had a pick six and a very dominant defensive performance as well. So
yeah, but that offense showed up in ways.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Hurts showed
up
in ways. I think that's why I said, this is from a narrative perspective. Like, Hurts doing that, but I get what you're saying. Like, if we're looking at him from like that top five QB perspective, it shouldn't be surprising. But I think narrative wise, Hurts has never been looked like as that. Before this season started, he wasn't ranked as a top 10 quarterback.
He was barely top 10.
Yeah, so it's like, with all that going on, to be Super Bowl MVP, to be seen that way, narrative standpoint, you went out there and you balled out. You went 17 for 22, I believe. One of the highest QB ratings, like I said, could have been much more. Ran for over 70 yards. It's like, damn, you know, you was doing everything you could while your offensive player of the year was being shut out. Like,
100%. I agree with what you're saying, EJ. But you touched on it a little bit, Justin. You said you don't have him top five. So after his Super Bowl performance, where would you rank him?
I think he's comfortably top 10. Top five, to me, is just
I respectfully have to ask you to list it.
I was about to say, what's your top 10?
I respectfully have to ask you to list
my top 10? I mean, y'all putting me on the spot right now, but I can start off by saying I think Mahomes is still head and shoulders the best quarterback in the league. Mm-hmm. I'd probably put Lamar second. Any combination of Burrow, Allen, that's four right there. Five, I don't think I'm putting Jalen Hurts at five.
Okay.
I think right now at five, I'm leaning more towards Stroud.
Okay. I'm not mad at that one.
I'm leaning more towards Stroud at five. And then that's when I can put
Willie,
Hurts.
I saw your face.
I can put Hurts into a conversation.
Okay.
We're putting Stroud over Hurts.
Yeah, I wouldn't put Stroud.
I'll put Stroud over Hurts. I personally would put Stroud over Hurts.
You know what? If he's going to put anybody above Hurts, it's CJ Stroud. But I think Hurts is
Trim, I think you're just a fan of CJ Stroud, though. Like, that's
No. CJ Stroud is nice, though.
He's nice, but, like, based off the... Like, if we're talking about rating in the NFL right now...
Yeah.
We're ranking him in the NFL right now based off what they have produced.
He had his top... His free agent...
His rookie year was crazy.
His free agent receiver got hurt.
I mean, don't talk to me about who got hurt. When I don't want to hear that.
His offensive line is garbage.
I'm talking about simply what you have produced in the NFL to this point right now. Jalen Hurts... And CJ Stroud.
Okay, so talking about what they produced, yeah, Jalen Hurts is.
But that's how you rank him, right? So I'm saying to hear CJ Stroud.
But that's
above
Jalen Hurts. Based off straight accolades, having a Super Bowl win and how he performs in the playoffs. If we're just talking about, if we're including talent and production and accolades,
mm-hmm.
Or if we're not taking, if we're just taking in talent and production,
or we're doing just talent.
Yeah, if we're taking in just talent, then CJ Stroud's above him. Not by much, but it's slight. It's really slight.
I mean, that's very unreasonable.
I don't think it's unreasonable, but I didn't know we were rating off just talent.
You going off like production and everything?
I thought we were just rating the quarterback.
We can't add accolades in there because Jalen Hurts has a second team.
I mean, not just accolades, but just what they like production. Like production is part of like what he's gotten to the Super Bowl twice.
Yeah, if we're going off accolades, he moves up then.
But not even just like I said, not even just accolades, just production. Like how a quarterback produces regardless of their team. Like if they produce, like this is everything you were saying last week. Like. One thing, I get it, like, maybe from a talent perspective, Hurts doesn't have the best pocket presence. He doesn't have the best pocket
presence. I think his pocket presence, I think from a talent perspective, Hurts is underrated. But when you start talking about guys like CJ Stroud,
Joe Burrow,
and Jaden Daniels, yeah, it kind of gets overlooked.
Yeah, definitely.
But
yeah. I'm not gonna say that's not true.
But as a complete football player,
yeah.
If you take in everything I just named, talent, production, accolades, see, Jalen Hurts is the second best quarterback in the NFL. I mean, third best quarterback, I'm sorry, Lamar Jackson. I forgot. But he's a better than the Burrows, the Hurts, the Herberts, the, what's the other one in there? The Jordan Love, the CJ Strouds, all of them. I'd say he's third if you add all that stuff on.
I'll give him CJ Stroud only because you said not by a lot. But CJ Stroud didn't have the best year this year.
I think when it comes to quarterbacks in the league right now, like, you have Mahomes, gap. And then I would say then there's Allen, Burrow, Lamar. And
gap.
Then there's a gap. There too.
No.
You don't think there's a gap?
No. Burrow, take him out.
No, I think Burrow is.
And he put Hurts in there with them.
I think Burrow is on the level.
You don't think Burrow's on the tiers of Allen's and Lamar's?
No, because you can't be a top four quarterback and your team is not in the playoffs. Like, you're just not an elite quarterback if your team can't get into the playoffs.
I mean, especially if you have the worst defense in the league, yeah.
You had a triple crown winner.
If you have the worst defense in the league, yes.
They didn't have the worst defense.
You can be a top five quarterback
They had like the 27th or 28th ranked defense. You know when Patrick Mahomes came into the league?
27th or 28th out of what?
32.
That's one of the worst in the league.
Patrick Mahomes had one of the worst defenses in the league his first two, 3 years in the league. And he won a Super Bowl in what, year three? Year two?
Yeah, but he has one of the best coaches of all time, too, on his roster.
I mean,
that is true.
To speak on the Joe Burrow thing, if I can bring up CJ Stroud again, just with the whole, you said, like, just not being able to make the playoffs, you don't think that's kind of a scenario of conference? Like, the Bengals playing in the AFC North and the Texans playing in the AFC South?
That's also a factor.
The Bengals dropped games to sorry teams, though.
Like, I mean, that first loss to the Patriots definitely is noticeable. I'm not saying that the team is complete. Their defense, as you guys said, is really bad. But I was just thinking, because, like, I'm just bringing CJ Stroud into it now, like, he kind of sneaks into the playoffs simply because the second best team in his division is negative. It's the Colts at 8-9. Like, I think all that factors in. So if we're talking about, like, why a quarterback can't be a certain way regardless of talent because of, like, you know, making the playoffs, I think the Texans team hasn't really shown me anything to, like, warrant CJ Stroud being looked at differently than Joe Burrow, the way you're looking at Joe Burrow.
I'm not looking at Joe Burrow any kind of way. I'm just saying, like, outside of that one Super Bowl run that he had, and he didn't play particularly great in that run. What has he done? He has no all pros. He has no.
Did he league in passing?
He has no, like, memorable games. Like, you can't say, oh yeah, Joe Burrow, he bought out this game. Yeah, granted, he had
memorable games.
Granted, he had when they beat him. When they beat him, that was because of the defense.
No, that's the playoff game. Regular right. season alone, he's thrown for like 400 multiple times against the Chiefs too.
Okay.
Like the two duels actually he had last year against Lamar. They lost that game mostly because, you know, their defense is horrible, but he went band for band with an MVP in the league. So, I mean, this is a common occurrence for him to go band for band with some of these guys who we say are undisputed better than him. I just don't know what we're waiting on as far as giving him his flowers. Are we waiting on a Super Bowl?
No, I just want him to be able to consistently, one, stay healthy, and two, perform in the playoffs.
Okay, I can get the health argument for sure. I can get the health argument.
But I think that's what I mean by the performing in the playoffs. That was my whole point against with Hurts when it came to the rating. Like, performing in the playoffs. Like, that's why it's really tough for me to put certain guys above him. Even though I know he's been in the league longer, I just can't jump the gun and say CJ Stroud is above him when Hurts has, you know, performed in the playoffs except for last year.
I agree. I like that point.
Again, though, if you don't have to do more, then why would you do more? Exactly. So it's not going to bash him for doing that anymore. I understand it. I just feel like sometimes, like, when I was just watching games during the season, it's like I just feel like he just wasn't, like, impressing me with anything. And it's just like, now that I see, though, like, I just see, like, at the end of the day, he's a winner, bro. So he's going to do whatever he can to win. And it doesn't matter if it makes him look good or if it makes everybody else look good. So,
yeah,
I definitely respect that.
Now, Patrick Mahomes now falls to 3-2 in Super Bowls. And suddenly we have to pump the brakes on, is he the GOAT or, you know, how fast he can catch Brady. After Brady's fifth Super Bowl, he was also 3-2. Granted, he was 34 years old.
That
so I got to throw that out there. So now, do you think we should pump the brakes on the GOAT talk, or is Patrick Mahomes fine? Because granted, I believe he's 29 or 30 right now.
Yeah.
Brady was 34 when he lost his fifth Super Bowl. So do you think Patrick Mahomes can still catch Brady?
For sure.
As the GOAT.
He can. I'll say that night, I immediately said this hurts his GOAT debate a lot, because when it was all said and done, you can't say Brady got blown out in the Super Bowl. And when he was getting blown out, he came back and won. So I think when it's all said and done, that factor will be a huge factor into it. But taking some time thinking about it, no, like you said, the age matters. He's only 29, 30 years old right now. If his career goes similar to Tom Brady in terms of longevity, he's got a lot more time to get a lot more rings, to be a winner, to stack on accolades and different records. I feel like once that all comes into play, we'll kind of like forget about this. It'll be an asterisk, like, oh, he did get blown out that one game, but he also won this many times. So I think beforehand I was thinking that way, but now I think we could still, you know, throw him in that GOAT talk every now and then.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I feel like he could definitely get there over time, but I feel like it'll need two chips. I feel like this one like really, because this is like, I mean, again, like going back, this was bad. Like, it's like, it was like there was nothing going for my man's at all, bro. So it's like,
is it the worst QB performance?
Peyton Manning had some.
Yeah, Peyton Manning was bad. I remember that one. No, Peyton Manning is like the year they won. That was like against the Panthers. Peyton Manning was bad, bro.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I know he was on his older. I know he was old, but it was like, jeez.
Yeah, bro. And it's like, honestly, bro, if they didn't like let it up, bro, like if they didn't let up a little bit on the fourth quarter, bro, like he would have finished the game with maybe 100 max, bro. With two picks, that's actually insane, bro. We're talking about GOAT. with two picks in the Super Bowl with 100 yards.
That would have been crazy. Like, that would have been kind
of
crazy.
So it's like, I just, at the end of the day, I'm not going to take away and go, like, jump the gun too far and say that he dropped completely, but it definitely did. Like, this was a very bad, like, this hurt him more than I thought it was, like, if he just lost, because it's just, like, the way, again, the fashion that he lost is what made it so bad. And so I just think that he'll probably be, like, yeah, like, maybe, like, fourth right now. I had him at third, but now I'll go, like, fourth.
Oh, really?
There was a name.
Wait.
Wow.
Who?
Tom Brady, Montana, and Peyton Manning.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
Wow, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Justin?
I feel like that the GOAT conversation should pause for now, but I think it's just more so because it was going to get out of hand if he won three anyways. Me personally, I thought he could have three-peated and still not have been the GOAT.
That's always been my
thought. I thought he could have three-peated and still not have been the greatest of all time, because we're talking about Brady winning seven championships over his career. He would have to at least come a little bit closer to that number, in my opinion. He could maybe get five, like a sort of LeBron and Jordan sort of deal. Or LeBron has two less rings than Jordan, but his longevity and the way he performed throughout his career is enough to get him over the Michael Jordan talks. I think now for Mahomes, after the fashion in which he lost his game, he might have to do a little bit more than even winning like five Super Bowls or maybe even six. I think he may need another MVP or two to really get him over Brady in that GOAT talks. But this conversation is going to last forever. Mm-hmm. If we're being honest, it's just the nature of the game. He's the best of his era. He's dominated the AFC the last few years. It's just the nature of the game. But what I can say is, we all have this sort of thing where it's like, oh, the Chiefs will be back next year. I don't know about that. I think I can see a world where some of these other teams actually do end up catching up to them, and they are a little bit more vulnerable. You already talk about like a talent sort of deficit right now on offense. Even though they've been able to make do with what they've had, we don't know how long they're going to be able to do that. So, I mean, Mahomes has played a lot of football over the last few years. We don't know how long his peak is going to last. So I think there's a world where some of these teams who have great quarterbacks, who have kind of rivaled Patrick Mahomes, they can actually catch up to them.
Am I entertaining that talk, Justin? We've been saying that since when they lost to the Buccaneers. We said that. I mean, it all sounds similar to me. They lost to the Buccaneers 31-9. Everyone was like, yeah, the Chiefs, whatever dynasty they was building is not there. They proceeded to go to three straight Super Bowls. Or no, after the Bengals and Rams won. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a... I can't jump to that conclusion that I think the Chiefs are still a dominant team. Regardless of how they win, they know how to win. And as long as you know how to win, you'll always be a dominant team.
But it's like, how much longer can Andy Reid hold on? You know, how much longer can some of the things that he's had throughout his entire career, Travis Kelce, how much longer can this stuff hold on to where it's like,
they definitely look like how they looked
championship every single
yeah how they looked
after
on
that.
The sideline, and like what the cameras were showing, it was like, yeah, it looks like it's the end. Like, it looks like Travis Kelce don't want to be here, it looks like Andy Reid don't want to be here, like Chris Jones don't want to be here. Like, it just looked like they was all ready to go. But like, I've heard that talk before, so it's like, that's why I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't end that way and they actually do end up, you know, continuing this dynasty run.
I think the dynasty will continue, but I'm fully expecting at least one down year, and that year will probably be next year, because if you look at it, the Chiefs have played more games than anybody in the NFL. I think they've played a full season's worth of playoff games, and that'll add to your body. Travis Kelce's not getting any younger. Andy Reid's not getting any younger. Mahomes, I think Mahomes will still be Mahomes, but once you lose your number one target, granted, you do have some young weapons coming up like Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice, who they didn't have throughout the majority of the season. Like I said, I fully expect at least one down year. They'll reload, regroup, come back stronger. I think, if I'm being completely honest, and this is a bold prediction, I think the next time Patrick Mahomes wins the Super Bowl, Andy Reid won't be his head coach.
That's fair.
The way that Andy Reid, you know, he said he'll be back next year, but like Justin said, the AFC is deep with talent and star quarterbacks. The Philadelphia Eagles, they still have Howie Roseman. They're not going to not draft good anymore. It's like, they could realistically repeat, and I'm pretty sure they're the favorites right now. So as far as the GOAT debate, dang, Justin hit all the points, really. He said that he's going to have to do a little bit more, and he related it to LeBron and Jordan, how LeBron didn't have six rings. And once that 2011 finals, which was basically Patrick Mahomes' performance last night or Sunday night, he's going to have to do some crazy thing, you know, win a couple more Super Bowls, have a historic moment, like a career defining moment,
all-time leader in passing yards.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, that's what I'm saying with the records. Like, you got to start getting some records, some accolades.
A crazy comeback win or something. Like, it's it's still 100% possible to catch Brady. He can play till he's 40 years old. He has 10 more years till he becomes 40, and he can win 3-4 more Super Bowls until then. So the GOAT debate's not closed.
But one thing I want to add to that before we move on to the next thing is we talked about the Jordan LeBron situation. One thing that LeBron definitely can take full advantage of is he never had to play Jordan. He never really had to play Jordan and risk his legacy being tainted because he lost to Jordan a couple times.
Played him
times.
In a pickup game.
I mean, yeah, but
Mahomes has lost twice.
Mahomes has lost twice to Brady.
No.
Games.
The first time was in a 2018 AFC Championship game. Overtime. He didn't get the ball back.
Yeah.
The second time, his offensive line was depleted. Yeah, we were all blocking for him. He was running for his life. He still performed.
Your reasoning is
so,
like, I get
if you,
it.
If you just look
lost.
At the record,
no one's going to care.
No, I'm going to say he lost. Like,
yeah, if you look, especially the Brady supporters, if you look at the record, it's going to say Brady 2-0, Mahomes 0-2. But if you actually look into those games, Mahomes outplayed him.
Like I said, the Chiefs easily could have won that 2018 AFC Championship game. I don't know if y'all, like you said, if you look into it, you remember D Ford being offsides.
Cost them the game.
Yeah, it's like things like that obviously cost them. And, you know, it would have changed everything. But at the end of the day, he lost. And
absolutely.
You have to see, like, people are going to make memes about Mahomes is 0-3 when Tom Brady's, like, announcing or anything like that. Like, you know, when he's in the building. Yeah. So just little things like that, those linger, and that's going to, you know, forever be on Mahomes, which is why we are saying, you know, he's got to do a little bit more now. But I think with the three-peat, because Justin, you mentioned this, with the three-peat, though, you would have said you don't think he would have been the GOAT. And I don't think he would have been the GOAT, but I think it would have helped him a lot.
Yeah, a lot.
Like it would have been like, yo, three-peat, like, come on now.
Yeah, facts, I feel like facts. If he would have got it, he would have just needed one more. And then if it would have been like whichever one you picking, to be honest. Like, yeah, but no. Definitely not the same.
100%, guys. 100%. Now, switching over to the NBA, the trade deadline has came and went. Arguably the most exciting, most surprising trade deadline in NBA history. We've seen Luka Doncic get dealt to the Los Angeles Lakers. So now, following the post-trade deadline era, who are the top five teams in the NBA? We can start with Justin.
All right. So ranking these
five to one. Who are your top five?
5-1.
Rank.
Oh, man.
Rank them.
Jesus.
All right. At one, I definitely still have OKC. They didn't really make any moves at the deadline, but adding Chet back is a move in itself, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's a better player than a lot of teams can say they traded for. So that definitely keeps them at number one. I would say that the Celtics are number two.
Okay.
I'm still very high on the Celtics roster. They struggle with some health throughout this entire season, but I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to look going into the playoffs, especially post All-Star break, which I think that team is going to turn the corner. Number three, I have the Cavs. DeAndre Hunter, I'm a player. I'm somebody who's very familiar with that player. I think that it's easy to get lost in the, oh, he's a great perimeter defender. He's okay. But I think he just has to be okay. I think he's an improvement in what they had in the starting lineup before. His ability to be that 3-and-D kind of wing connector as well is something that is going to be very useful for them, because we already talked about some of the issues that the Cavs had along the perimeter. So I have the Cavs at 3. 4, this is where it gets tricky to be, because I think I want to say I can put the Nuggets at 4.
Oh, okay.
Wait, I'm tripping. The Grizz at 4. I can put the Grizz at 4. Now, we talk about the way Ja has kind of taken a step back throughout the season. But you've seen Jaren Jackson step up. This team is deep. This is one of the deepest rosters in the NBA as far as how deep they can go into the playoffs. So I would have them at 4. And then at 5, I would put the Nuggets, because they have the best player in the world. And the roster is, they're now a game behind the second seed. People haven't been paying attention to that. After a slow start, the Denver Nuggets are a game behind the second seed.
Now they're hooping.
So I will have them at 5.
Willie.
Alrighty. Yeah, I have a pretty similar list. It's different, like the order. I would say number one to me is the Celtics, just because I just still feel like the Celtics have the best roster in the NBA. And it feels like when they every time, like, even when they lose, it's like the next game they come out and win by 30. It's like they just, like, sometimes they just have bad games, but it's like they already know what to do to win. And it's like every time they just, I feel like they just really are just a good team, and they can just outplay anybody from what I've seen. Second, I would go the Cavs. I do like this. I was debating this a lot between them and the Thunder, but I feel like the Cavs have a lot of depth, and I feel like this DeAndre Hunter addition was like a very good addition for their team. It feels like they always, like, the one thing they never had was like just, I mean, they had Max Strus. Max Strus was okay, but like they need like a solid certified bucket getter on the floor, and I feel like DeAndre Hunter is definitely that. He's averaging about close to 20 on the Hawks, and it's like he could definitely bring a lot to this team, which is already a deep team. Then third, I'm definitely going with the Thunder. Thunder been very electric, and with adding Chet back, that adds more offense, because it feels like Shai, even though they always win, it feels like Shai's is always like the main center of attention when it comes to offense, and I feel like that'll be able to add more expansion on that. Fourth, I would go with the Nuggets, just because even though I feel like the Nuggets have kind of been underperforming a little bit in the series, but again, I mean, during the season, but again, with Jokic on your team, you always have potential to win with stuff like that. And for my fifth pick, this is where, I don't know, bro. Honestly, who did you said the Grizzlies? I don't know.
I put the Grizz at four. Honestly, it's interchangeable between the Grizz and the Nuggets. But another team that I would throw out there that's still been pretty solid this season is the Knicks.
Yeah, the Knicks, yeah. Okay, yeah, that'll be my fifth. I would go with the Knicks. Mm. It's just that I respect the Grizzlies. I just need to see something in the postseason, because it's like they do this every season. Like, they always are somewhere in the top three in the West, and then they come against some team in the eighth or ninth seed and just get whacked. So it's like I just need to see more in the future. But I definitely agree with the Knicks. The Knicks have a lot of depth. OG and Anobi, Miles Bridges, Kyle and Town, Jalen Brunson. They always have a lot of different players and stuff like that. I just feel like, again, they're a team that a little bit needs to find a little bit more consistency. They have a good record, but I just see, like, when they play good teams, like, for example, the Bucks and stuff like that, it's like they don't never come out and just dominate as they should, even though they have a better roster, in my opinion.
Okay.
For my number one, I'm going with the Thunder, because I simply believe they deserve to be there. They've been hooping, and like you guys said, Chet's coming back. Can't deny that. Can't ignore that. 43-9. I believe in them. Number two, I'm going with the Celtics. I'm putting them above the Cleveland at three, only because I think that experience in the East, I think they know how to run the East. I think they know how to come out of the East. So I'm going to put them at two above Cleveland. And then Cleveland's going to be my three. My four is going to be Denver. And then my five is why I was laughing. I'm putting the Lakers at five. I'm doing it.
If you're laughing at that one, so y'all going to... Dialogue.
I mean, I knew yours was gonna be something similar because I know you, but yeah, I'm pulling the U and I'm pulling the Lakers at five. It's a lot of believing in the other players like Austin Reeves and Rui to step up, but I could just tell from one game. I know it's a jump, but from just one game, I could tell how much Luka and LeBron are gonna create opportunities for everyone else. Like, I'm talking, Rui was getting wide open shots, like. Luka and LeBron are going to draw so much attention. It's going to be too hard to stop both of them. If as long as Rui and Reeves and everyone else, like, steps up to the plate, that's a team to look out for.
Yeah, especially if the Mark Williams trade went through. Like, I feel like that's the only thing that they just, like, because Jackson Hayes, he's been solid, but as your starting center, like, you just want a real dominant big man.
Oh, yeah, because Jackson Hayes wouldn't be able to guard Jokic. Yeah, so I'm exactly. Just going to play it like that. Like, if it's Hayes versus Jokic, they see the Nuggets in the playoffs. Let me ask you,
who on Denver do you really trust to guard Luka Doncic for a seven-game series?
Nobody.
Think that's where, like, my toss-up between putting the Lakers in that top five.
That's why I think it'll go to, like, game seven or something like that, but...
Now, I thought about the Lakers, too, before we get to Mike. Mm-hmm. I thought about the Lakers, too. My thing is, I can't put them in the top five because I've seen Luka and LeBron dominate one game against Utah.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I know it's a jump. You only saw one game. But I see a vision there, and I see what the Lakers were thinking when they did it. And I can kind of see it happening. Like I said, who's going to guard Luka and LeBron? It's really tough. There's not a lot of people that you can, a lot of teams you can say match up with that.
Now, one team I do think can throw some bodies.
Memphis
Grizzlies. Yeah. I think the Grizzlies are a team that can throw some bodies.
I was going to say the Grizzlies. like for a team that can throw some bodies. But that's why I said I had the Grizzlies. Well, no, I didn't put the Grizzlies in my top five, but they would be my six.
Top five is tricky. It's a lot of great teams in the NBA.
Don't say nothing stupid.
Especially after this NBA trade deadline. At number one, I got the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are arguably the best team in basketball. They split with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And adding in a guy like DeAndre Hunter, who's been hooping this year.
I didn't take that into account.
As a wing defender, he's not, obviously his scoring's going to take a dip because I think he's been averaging like 20 a game, 19, 18, something around there. His scoring's going to take a little bit of a dip. But as a defender, I think his defense will go up, especially playing with guys in the front court like Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. You know, in Atlanta, he didn't have the defensive front court that he's going to have in Cleveland. So I think that'll help him defensively on the perimeter. So I like that addition a lot. That's why they're my number one. That's why they're my number one team in the NBA. Shoot. But the second best team in the NBA is the Oklahoma City Thunder. Shea, J-Dub, Chet came back. Their roster is full of defenders who can guard multiple positions. Shea's probably going to win MVP this year. They have Isaiah Hartenstein in the front court. I believe they just made a move for Daniel Tice, so they have a third big man to throw out there. Thunder are my second best team in the NBA. At three, I got the Boston Celtics.
I thought I was going to get crazy there. I'm not going to lie to you.
It almost did. Trust. At three, I got the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics are a good basketball team. I may not be the biggest Jason Tatum fan or Jaylen Brown fan, but they are an elite wing duo, and they have a good head coach, good front office. They continue to build good teams. I think they're just coasting right now throughout the season. That's why they're having these nasty losses. But we've seen when it comes to the playoffs, they get to the Eastern Conference Finals at a consistent rate when they're healthy. So they're my third best team in the Eastern Conference. The fourth best team I have is the Los Angeles Lakers.
I knew it. I can tell.
Wow.
Lakers are the four seed. I know you said the Nuggets are, you know, a game back from the two seed. The Lakers are 2.5 games back from the two seed. They're right there. They just got one of the five best players in the world in Luka Doncic. And they have LeBron James. They have J.J. Redick as the head coach. Austin Reeves is playing the best basketball of his career. Why not? Why not make a finals run in LeBron's, one of LeBron's final years? At number five, this is where it gets a little wicked. I got the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, that's wicked.
It's not that wicked.
Trim, I told you before you started wicked. Not to say nothing stupid.
It's not that wicked.
What do you mean it's not that wicked?
The Golden State Warriors made an acquisition for the Jimmy Butler III, and they've won two games back-to-back. They beat the Chicago Bulls. Okay, cool. Then they beat the Milwaukee Bucks.
And that warrants
without
not
Giannis. Without Giannis, by the way.
But that, correct. That warrants not having the Nuggets
on
your
on.
List.
Hold on. The Warriors have a favorable schedule coming up in the Western Conference. If you look at the teams ahead of them, the Sacramento Kings, who they are tied with right now, they're going to fall apart. DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine's not going to keep you in the play-in game. The Dallas Mavericks, they just traded their best player away and for a guy who got hurt. It's probably going to be out for the rest of the year. Yep. The Timberwolves, they're 2.5 games back. So are they from the Clippers. So they can get to that 6th seed. I don't think the Rockets are going to, you know, drop that many games to where the Warriors, well, they're 6 games back, 6 whole games back. That's going to be tough. I think they can get to that 5th seed. But if you look at their schedule coming up, they have, give me 1 second. I just had it up.
Chubby, the bad teams you skipping, though. You're skipping a lot of teams.
Hold on. The Warriors, they got the Kings, the Mavs, the Hornets, the Magic, the Sixers, the Hornets again. Then they have the Knicks. I believe that's going to be a 6-game win streak right there. They have the Knicks. That's a tough game. Then they have the Nets, the Pistons, the Blazers, the Kings, the Knicks again. Like, that is a stretch where you can go 10-2.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that you on the favorable schedule, stretch, but yeah. I think the point I'm getting at is more so that 5 spot. I'm not saying that the acquisition for Jimmy wasn't beneficial for them, and I don't think that they won't, especially with the schedule they have, turn it around and at least get into that playoff spot.
Yeah.
But I think that there's other teams that we are neglecting if we say the Warriors are 5.
100%. You got the Grizzlies, the Nuggets.
Yeah.
Shoot, throw the Rockets in there.
The Rockets, I throw the Knicks in there as well.
But I think when you, and granted, it's only been 2 games, but the way I've seen Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry play together, I don't see these other 2 teams or other 3 teams competing with them, honestly.
Nuggets?
No.
You don't see the Nuggets competing with them with the best player in the world.
Who's gonna guard him?
They really don't have to guard him. That's the thing. You can let Jokic go off, But Murray's not going to go off. Russ not going to go off. MPJ's not going to go off.
How do we know?
Who do we? I'm saying if that would be the
True, I'm trying to keep it, I'm trying to keep it cordial in the booth, but like I think you're ignoring the Nuggets right now, man. Like
I don't think I'm ignoring the Nuggets.
Or actually, I'll get away from the Nuggets because I think the Nuggets is self-explanatory. I think that's just a reach. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the Grizzlies.
The Grizzlies haven't been out of the second round in the John Morant, Jaren Jackson era.
That's cool, but
so
like,
if we're in a playoff series, mm-hmm. I'm gonna take Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry, two guys who are elite playoff performers.
I mean, Ja isn't a horrible playoff performer.
No, I'm not saying that out there. I didn't say he was a horrible playoff performer. I'm just saying they haven't had the playoff success.
Yeah.
We haven't seen it yet. So right. When they can get over the hump, okay, then we can have that.
So your reasoning is just Jimmy and Steph are, you know, certified playoff performers. Like they've been there before. They know what to do.
I think they'll be like the Lakers, what was that, 2 years ago when they were, what, the sixth seed, fourth seed, and they made it to the Western Conference Finals against the Nuggets.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but.
That year. I think they'll be a low seed. They'll be a low seed. And they're going to go make a run. I think they were a 7 seed.
They were the 7 seed.
Because they beat the 2 seed Grizzlies.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. I don't think the Warriors have the bench to really be able to go. Yep.
I think the difference, because like my point with the Lakers was LeBron and Luka kind of create openings for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Curry, if the Warriors team is built to have Curry and Jimmy creating openings for everyone else. Because if you're going to tell me that Curry and Jimmy are going to create an opening for Draymond Green to shoot, we'll have that all day. Now, granted, this is one of his best shooting like 3-point percentages ever. But still, if you want to live or die by that, that's fine by me. If you want Draymond to be your support, like your guy, and that's how you want to play with those two, I'm fine with living by that. I don't see the Warriors getting past the first round playing like that.
Okay, that's fair. Now on to our favorite part, shout-outs. Got to shout out God first and foremost. You know, without him, we wouldn't be able to do what we do every day, do what we love in the School of Journalism. Got to give a shout out to my family. Miss y'all. Went and seen y'all this past weekend. Proud of all y'all and everything y'all doing. Shout out to the guys in the studio for getting in recording the episode. You know, we all got busy schedules and stuff like that. But shout out to Jeffrey Hood Jr., man. Jeff been giving me feedback on the show, how to be a better producer, how to just produce better content in general. He's always looking out for me. So shout out to Jeff.
I want to shout out God, first and foremost, being there for me, helping me through a lot of tough times going on right now. I want to shout out to all my professors, because this is my last semester. I need y'all to tighten up and, you know, help me out a little bit. Shout out to Professor Fowler, though, because I'm going to be working on this documentary that's going to be coming out in J-School Journal. So stay on tune for that. And then also shout out to graduation coming up.
Well, I'm going to keep the train going. I'm going to say first and foremost, shout out to God. Then I'm also say shout out to all the guys in the studio. It's my first time being on a podcast, and it was definitely very smooth, very enjoyable. So I really appreciate them for making it real smooth and easy. Not never had to do much talking for real, just came in and got straight to it. And also just shout out to whoever's listening, man. We appreciate you and you keep us going. So thank y'all for that.
Keep the train going. Shout out to God. Appreciate all you fellas in the studio. Really always acknowledging that every week. It makes my day to know that I'm around fellow brothers in Christ. So love that. I want to say shout out to my advisor, Joshua Lauder. I was going through a tough time last month. He really pulled me to the side and had a conversation with me that I really needed. So thank you for the words of encouragement, Mr. Lauder. And shout out to the family too. And it's Valentine's week, so I got to give a shout out to my girl. So keep doing what she's doing. I love you.
You love to hear that.
Why you looked at me?
I don't know. I just felt like somebody else had to go. My fault.
Jalen Hurts is the top 5 QB.
Halftime with the Playmakers is produced in the studios of WNM FM 90.5 in the School of Journalism and Graphic Communication at Florida A&M University.